I want to introduce to you the finest people at the moment in the British Isles. Stand up, please. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Now I introduce you to you. Thank you. It isn't every day you get to meet as many fine people as you will find in any Scientology gathering. Now, are you inclined to hear a little something about a new factor in Scientology?
Yes.
Well, that new factor is control. The procedure today is called CCH. Communication, control, and happiness. And the factor of control has taken rank straight up the line with every other important factor and has now gone beyond it to a point where it ranks with communication and happiness. And the moment we look at these three factors, we are looking at the two sides of a coin. We are looking communication, real communication. Top bright side. Terrific. Wonderful. Real control. Top bright. Wonderful. Real havingness. Good. Top side of the coin. Perverted, twisted havingness. Denied havingness. We're looking at the factor which made people aberrated. Bad. Black side of the coin. Control. Bad control. Unpositive control. Control with punishment, duress, threat. That's the bad side of the coin that aberrated people. And we look at the third factor, communication. Miscommunication, twisted communication, perverted communication, lies, no acknowledgments. Communicate with the wrong thing in the wrong direction. We're looking at the factor that aberrated people. And we have come up with these three factors which give us the plus from which all other pluses stem and the minus from which all aberration stems. Those three minuses, bad communication, bad control, and twists on havingness or absence of, gives us the aberrated condition we find man in. And the cure, the release, lies in these other three fields. Good communication, good control, good happiness. And you've got the story. We have another trio. A trio as important as ARC was in its day. A tremendous trio, a very valuable one. How you go about this and what all this means is fabulous. The simplicity by which one can resolve the problems of man with these three cannot be exaggerated even by me. And that's quite a statement. Now, we come down to an interesting new definition. Up to this time, somebody asked you what a Scientologist was. It was not easy to tell them. It was someone who audited people, or somebody who was therapeutic, or somebody who wasn't, somebody who was. It wasn't that being a Scientologist was a difficult or complicated thing, but it was not really a very specific and positive thing. Let's look at the doingness of a Scientologist. The doingness of a Scientologist. Describe it. What does he do? Well, he audits people and he gathers group. No, I'm sorry. That isn't a specific doingness that we can rattle off, you know. And the postman, the bus conductor, or anybody else simply says, that's for true. That's for true, you know. Oh, is that what he is? Glur. You know? No impact. Well, there's one you can rattle off now. It's important to have such a definition, by the way. You won't agree with this one, not right this minute. Not until you've done some auditing on this line or had some auditing on this line. You will flinch because remember I said that control was also aberration and the way out. Bad control, you see, was aberration itself. So the word control itself is a little bit subject to question. So maybe today you won't have any great agreement with this. But I'll make you a bet after you've listened to the tape series on the 17th ACC. After you've looked this over quite a bit, I'll make you a real good bet that you'll be using this one. Scientologist is one who controls people, environments, and situations from Tone 40. Oh, you want a situation control? Call a Scientologist. You want environment control? Call a Scientologist. Are your wife's out of control again? Call a Scientologist. Simple as that. What does the Scientologist do? Well, it becomes a fact when you recognize that it can be done. But up to the moment when you find out with good subjective reality that it can be done, you're going to look at this one with just a little bit of, Ron says so, but I've heard these things before, the latest fad, and so forth. Now, what do we do with such a definition? We have to look squarely at what we have to do in order to help people. What is a Tone 40 control? It is beyond the reach of Homo sapiens. He has never been able to do this. It's a taught technique, knowledge. It requires 5 steps of indoctrination before a fellow reaches up to such a level. It's a discipline, the like of which you yourself hadn't thought existed. But it's achievable and rather easily today by a Scientologist. What is control? Control is start, change, and stop. That's easy, isn't it? Well, what's a hypnotist? He is somebody who stops people's attention and fixes it. Therefore, does a hypnotist control people? No, he does not control people. He merely stops people. So he's a ruddy fraud. He controls circuits, machinery, implants, by putting in more circuits, machinery, and implants. And he never for one moment does more than back the person himself off a little bit further from taking responsibility for the situation. Now, to control somebody's attention is absolutely necessary if you're going to communicate. And for you to be communicated to, it is necessary for you to accept a control of your attention to some degree, isn't it? There's a slight necessity there. Well, supposing that you have been pushed down to a point where every time anybody gave you attention or told you you had to give attention, you went into a fix, you know? Hypnotic. Ah, there must be something wrong with the way your attention's been controlled way back down the track and somewhere. Mm-hmm. Papa was probably a genius at it. He was probably a wonderful fellow. He probably just knew all there was to know about control. You do that once you get it off, beat your head off. You know? Why is it you didn't ever obey him? Well, if he was set, fixated, and upset about control, why didn't he ever control anybody? There's a big difference between trying to and doing so. And after a fellow feels he can't anymore, he gets like Papa.
You do that once more and I'll roll.
What happens to the state? What happens to the state when it says, if you bump off one other gent, we will hang you? Oh, it's at once admitted that it cannot control your actions regarding your fellow man. Every time they have a sign hanging up that says the penalty is, they've admitted something interesting that they can no longer control. It's not that they're now going to control by force, because one was never controlled by force. Force will not and cannot control. Do you understand that? You can put somebody into apathy so he cannot be controlled or control anything with force, and therefore render him dead or not dangerous. But this is, again, a different thing from start changing and stopping somebody. That's a new thing. So we object to parts of control. We say we object to being stopped. We object to being obsessively controlled. We object to all sorts of factors with regard to this. We think. And the surprising thing about it is we have never looked at control. Never. We are the first amongst men to see this thing called control. Where can it go? What is control? How do you control something? Now, when I tell you control is that important to a Scientologist, you are at first going to say to me, uh-oh, well, I don't know, I've seen a lot of control in my day. Makes me nervous. Somebody coming along with this much ability to control things. Listen, if you can be controlled, there's nothing under the sun that can aberrate you. If you can clearly never resist control. People ask me every once in a while, how do you ever get along? I get audited by a person or something, and he upsets my case or something of the sort. I mean, he would upset your case. The person comes in and says, I'll give you a session. I sit there and I get a session. He goes away. And I either feel better or I don't feel any different. I don't feel much worse. Why? Well, I never realized there was any virtue in this before. And one day I found out what I did. I did exactly what they said. And sometimes it was too silly to make anybody well, you see. But I always did exactly what they said, if it could possibly humanly be done. This is very baffling to some auditors, particularly new ones. They say, can you see the wall? You look at them and you say, yes. They said, no, no, I want you to look at the wall. You say, all right, and you look at the wall. You get it? They say, can you get the idea your father is a beast? And I'll say, yep. They'll say, fine. Now get it again. I say, get what? Get the idea your father's a beast. Oh, you want me to do that now? Yes, you did it before, didn't you? And I say, no, you asked me if I could get the idea that my father was a beast, and I told you yes. But you didn't tell me to do so. He says, my, he's being trying. What do these fellows think they want to do? They want me to sit there and self-audit? Somehow or other make a session out of it? Dub it in one way or the other and get along there somehow. You know. Can you look at the wall? Yes. Sure, I can look at the wall. Why don't you? I say, who wants me to? He says, I do. I said, well, all right. Only there's one thing I'd like to say as a preclear is don't put your commands on telepathy. And I, outside of maybe a couple of times when something disastrous has occurred, somebody has pushed me way back down the track and stuck me in something and then gone out for a cup of coffee and never gotten back, have I ever had any difficulty in auditing. Somebody comes up and says, I wouldn't be audited by him. He's dreadful. He does terrible things to you. When a person tells me he is worried about auditors, he tells me that he is always himself trying to make a session out of it. He is himself worried about being controlled. But a positive tone 40 control is not aberrative, but quite the reverse. It's quite therapeutic. Now, you're going to agree with this as soon as I tell you one little line. People have difficulty handling life. People have difficulty handling messed objects. You see them dumping cars astraddle fire plugs and wrapping them around light poles and running them into buses and so forth. They have difficulty with things. They got to get out of control, they say. Well, how could anything get out of control if it was ever really in control? So the thing went out of control, they say, and that's why it wrapped itself around the motorman's neck. You say, all right, fine. Is there anything else in life that you would like to control? Oh, yes. No. Well, you say, how about your mother? And they say, duh. Well, how about your wife? What about my wife? Well, what about controlling your wife? Ooh. You don't suppose anybody could, do you? He's so far back and so upset about controlling things and being controlled himself that he resists it up to a point where every time a control is undertaken, he sticks. And he gets sort of hypnotized and upset and so forth. But his effort, in general, is in the direction of attempting to control something. Not aberratedly, he just would like straightforwardly, and then he falls away from being able to do so, so he adopts mechanisms of one kind or another. Now, a few years ago, we had something called the service facsimile. That was the facsimile, the series of mental image pictures, ills, and difficulties, which somebody used in order to control others. That's right, isn't it? That's right. Well, all right, if that's the case, what's wrong with this fellow's ability to control things? If he has to go over into illness and sickness and aberration, if he has to throw himself down and gnaw the corners of rugs like Hitler did, just to get some general to finally say, well, all right, I'll do it. There must be something awfully wrong with this chap's ability to control. And how about a service facsimile? Tells you at once that if your preclear was tolerant on the subject of control, if he did not himself resent the idea of control, if he himself could control, where would be his service facsimile? It would be gone. And as long as an individual believes that he needs some aberrated mechanism in order to control things, you won't audit it out of him. So you have to rehabilitate control before he gets rid of any of these things. And so it proves in the auditing session. Thus, many of the cases you have seen that have been rather dilatory in getting well could today, knowing what we know now about control, be made into a considerable case. Upstairs, doing well, fast. Control was the stuck point. Now, the difference between a good auditor and a bad auditor is the willingness of the auditor to control. That is the result that one auditor gets compared to the result some other auditor gets with the same technique. It is not communication. It is first and foremost control. If he is able to or willing to control his preclear, then the auditor plus the preclear can control the circuits and aberrations of the preclear. And an auditor who is not willing to and who cannot control a preclear will have any technique, no matter how brilliant or well thought out, twist in his hands. Therefore, he must know how to control people. So right away, we take the indoctrination course at the Huzzy. We square it around. We give a special course on this. We straighten it up. It does not take very long to learn. It's only about 5 levels of indoctrination now instead of just 1. Doesn't take too long to learn. When you get through with that, you can do what? You can control people. And so we have a series of techniques that do this, and thus we will gain a great many auditors who can do this. But something very funny happens. So he is in session. He's controlling the preacher. And the preacher is getting well. And everything's going along swimmingly and beautifully. And there's nothing wrong happening. And the auditor says, look at the wall. The preacher does. Walk over to it, and the preacher does. And the auditor says, put your hand on it, and the preacher does. And the auditor says, thank you. And this auditor goes out, and he runs into some psycho 1-1 that's spinning in, that is a homo alcoholic, something like that, you know? I mean, it's just completely... If he'd spun in any harder, he would have drilled a hole in the ground. And he meets this fellow in real life, you know. He meets him in real, live, real, deadly, earnest life. Old classmate, something like that, you know. And he says, ow. Won't be very long before I'm tearing the roots out of my hair, because I know this boy, 1-1. Real bad. Mm-hmm. And he says hello to the fellow, and the fellow says hello to him. He says, this is funny. He never has said hello back before. He said, he's told you about his best illness. Or how last night he saw a dog vivisected. Some other tidbit of conversation that he enjoys handing around. Ah, something's different. So he says to him, let's go down and have a beer. The 1-1 says, okay, I'll buy. He walks down to the pub. They have their beer, talk about the weather and sports, and how it's all going. He tells the guy goodbye. A few days later, he runs into the fellow's wife, and he says, for heaven's sakes, what a tremendous change in your husband. Has he gotten some auditing? And the wife says, auditing? No, he wouldn't have any of that filthy stuff. He's a clean boy. I mean, I broke him of his bad habits. I wouldn't do anything. No, but this tremendous change that's taken in him. Well, his wife up to this time has been standing more or less with her back to him. See? She turns around, and she's got a black eye, and he says, tremendous change, is it? He's acted the same way he's acted for the last 6 years. What made you think he'd changed? Ah, we're running into almost mystic things in Scientology, aren't we? That would be the first time an auditor would learn that by auditing, his relationship had changed, not the race. The race hadn't changed any. Probably even gone downhill a little bit. Auditor's relationship to the race and his friends and so forth changes. And what do we have? We have control. The fellow was perfectly willing to go into communication with him. Because in the few minutes that the fellow was with him, were the only few minutes anybody had ever talked to the fellow. The rest of the world talks to his circuits, and his circuits can't obey. And so we get this oddity. We get a different view of behavior. We get an entirely different view of behavior. From where we sit. But there is no difference of view of behavior from where the public sits. on the same person. What an oddity. Why? What happens? What's the difference? What's the change? What's altered this? Because, let's say, the Scientologist's taste hasn't changed that much. And that's what's peculiar. Taught somebody to do tone 40 control. He couldn't talk. He was trying to audit. And he'd say, we got a hold of him. He'd been through dummy auditing. We ran him into the next step up from dummy auditing. We ran him into the next step up from that. We ran him into the next step up from that. And then we ran him into the final step. We got him to do tone 40 control. Didn't take very many hours. Relatively few hours. In the auditing room, all of a sudden, this fellow who couldn't talk would say, look at the wall. Good. Walk over to it. Good. Put your hand on it. Good. And outside of the auditing room, he said, I'm doing a pretty good job. How weird. Now I understand something new has occurred. He's found out that people are manageable in the society, and he stopped stammering outside, too. In other words, where we could, with security, establish a zone of control for this individual, his ability to communicate was up. And everywhere that there was a zone of control for this individual, we found his communication good. What's the difference between a good speaker and a bad speaker? Actually, a good speaker can control an audience and a bad speaker cannot. And where does this show up? Well, in personal efficiency, when they use a process on a group known as agreement, the instructor has to go into communication with various individuals inside the group. And this gives the group the aspect of going out of control. And you have a fellow who is not very good at speaking, and he looks at a group and starts to drive them out of control, and what happens? He says, his communication freezes, and he backs right off the rostrum. He doesn't want to do that. So you have to take somebody and use a club on him. If he has trouble speaking to groups, you have to use a club on him to get him to use this agreement process which permits parts of the group to participate. He isn't just auditing the whole group one at a time, wholly, you know, just as one thing, wholly. See, he's having to pick out people and talk to them individually in the group, and this is very upsetting to an auditor who has difficulty controlling a group. But if we raise his control ability over a group, and if we drive him through and we make him one way or the other, use this agreement process whereby he has to ask various parts of the group to define things for him and do things and create more or less a confusion, what do we find out? All of a sudden the fellow can relax, he can talk to a group. In other words, where control is possible, communication is possible. But you cannot communicate before attention is established. And the establishment of the attention requires control. You see that?
Yes.
Now, just because control has been so misused, just because it has been so abused, just because there has been Torquemada and his auto-da-fés, just because the cops down here think they have to throw you into a little wired cage in order to get you not to cross the white lines backwards or something, you know? Just because there is so much duress and punishment used in the world at large and associated with control, just because most parents who have a bad family cannot control their children and therefore try obsessively to control them, this word control has certain connotations connected with it which tell us that it is itself aberration. But the only aberrity part of control is bad control. And what is bad control? Punishment, duress, abuse, low-tone communication, giving a person an order, and then before he can complete that, giving him something else to do, and before he can do that, giving him something else to do, and then telling him he's all wrong about the whole thing. These are, quote, control. Well, it's a difficult thing even to dignify the word control with all of those malpractices, but the world at large has managed to do so, and so has fallen away from control, and they no longer think that control is important, and the only thing that's wrong with the United States of America today, it thinks control is so unimportant that it is becoming internally an uncontrolled country. Therefore, it is seeking control, and sooner or later may very well move into the field of fascism. Do you see that? You take a family where a good control is used on children, not a whole bunch of punishment and so on, which is good and positive, and you'll find the family is running pretty well. Now, there is something else interesting here. It's this thing called self-determinism and pan-determinism. We have found that there is something stands as a barrier between the ability of a person to be self-determined and the condition he is in, and that is willingness to be controlled. As long as a person will resist control, then everything that comes along which threatens to control him can do so, and thus you have aberration. And until he has a total tolerance of control, he cannot be self-determined or pan-determined. He cannot determine or have a power of choice. Since every time he makes up his mind about one thing, anything comes along, make up his mind the other way, he's resisting control, so he has to make up his mind some other way. Where's this self-determinism? Where is this mind he's making up? Where is this power of choice? We have been charitable. We have been very charitable. We have said that tone was composed of body plus Thetan, just to get technical on you. What Thetan? How much Thetan? How much spirit was present? How much beingness was actually there? Well, I'm afraid it was just enough in most cases to energize the circuits. Silly to give it in a percentile, but it'd be something like, we thought that there's been 10%, and it turns out to be 0.001%. Because for the first time, we can walk a Thetan right straight up the minus tone scale. Nice as you please. We've seen it happen over at the Hazy just in the last few days. I told a couple of the staff auditors, do so-and-so-and-so with this control process, and immediately they saw this phenomenon that we've been watching them. Finally, first turned into existence in the 17th ACC. They start right up to the tone scale. What's marvelous is that the minus tone scale is there to be marched up. I take much less credit for having found some way to march people up this tone scale. You see, that's not anything I'm proud of. I knew sooner or later that would happen. But to have been totally accurate in predicting this minus scale, well, it was quite... I'm still stonied. Every once in a while, somebody comes in and he says, well, you know, Ron is this and Ron is that, and he's real bad and so forth. And I overhear some mutter rumble someplace or another. And I sit back and I say, well, I accurately predicted the minus tone scale. Because it was total nonsensical prediction. I didn't think we'd ever have any use for it. And eventually it occurred to me that all these people that went into apathy when they were being processed were coming upscale. That was just a short time ago. And the minus tone scale has been plotted for years and years. Well, I say, wait a minute. Can it be that in Scientology 880, the layout of the minus tone scale is accurate? Oh, it's a funny thing for me to be accurate. As a matter of fact, according to an editor of a magazine some time ago, the main thing wrong with me is I'm so damnably right. He can't ever forgive me for this. He used to be a friend of mine, but I just went on being right. He used to write me letters, and he'd say, please, Ron, admit you're wrong about something or other, you know, and I had the secretary acknowledge it or forget about it or something. And he finally broke down and he said, the man's no good, he's right. He actually wrote this as an editorial in the magazine. I got a clipping, I think, from every third Scientologist in the world. Well, anyhow, I was right, just that once at least. and that was on that minus tone scale. The reason they don't remember a section or area of the past, as though that's important, is if they don't know or remember it, it's because it's below zero, which means below memory. A person who is below apathy cannot remember. And when a person is depressed below apathy, he can neither emote nor remember. And if he can't emote or remember, how the living consarned doggone does anyone ever come along and plot the exact steps of a minus scale in which there's no memory? I've been laughing about this because over the ACCs, they've been walking people through control processes and they go right straight from weight, height, you know, right up the scale. Protect, own, right up. And all of a sudden they get up to irresponsibility, knowing irresponsibility, and they can't walk. They can't even lug the body over to the wall. These people have been walking all around, you know, but it must have been like wind-up dolls, because when they eventually get up to a point where they can make the body walk, they look like Raggedy Ann's, you know, just rag dolls. They say, let's see, how's the body supposed to... Oh, well, it's a good thing I don't have to make it walk. And the auditor's left with the necessity of lugging him across the room. The guy's heels dragging. And then he comes up above this on the band, and all of a sudden, gee, is it good to be apathetic? He has actually achieved a level where he can appreciate apathy. It's at least an emotion. And he goes on up the rest of the tone scale. If you can see this occurring rapidly in an individual, you will understand what he has been struggling with in his workaday world. He's been trying to control things. They've been trying to control him. He just fights back. After a while, he sinks so far out of sight, so far below emotion, that he is even below not caring. He's on a negative not care, you might say. It's one thing to just not care. And it's quite another thing not to know or ever suspect what you're not caring about. And that's a lot lower on the tone scale, I think you will admit. So when we look over this parade of control factors, and when we look over the techniques of control, we must then conclude that a society is as bad off as it is running bad control. I would say that if a society had any police that in order to control people, get them to park in the right places and do the various things, had to offer any kind of punishment of any kind, or fine, or reprimand, that society was already out of control. An army, if we can get the idea of an army existing without the purpose of uncontrolling some other country, an army would really cease to be efficient the moment that somebody got 10 days in the guardhouse for doing something. You're right away saying, well, the generals and so forth have just lost the grips on the troops. You know, squads east and west, the army does a lot of this, you know, squads east and west. Well, they do squads east and west, and if you go out and see some army doing squads east and west, and they're doing it sort of sloppy, and the rifles are this way and that way, you know, strictly out of the latest training camp. You go around and you say, what is this? Who's the sergeant that's teaching him to do this? Now, we've got a good man on that. We have Jenks. Hellfire and damnation Jenks, they calls him. One of those men gets just that much out of step into the guardhouse. Boom. No pass. Good man, this Jenks. We need more of him. Yes, fighting for the enemy. Yeah, we need lots of him over there. But we don't want him. Because that's not control. Every punishment is a confession that one's control isn't good. When you say, if you don't do so-and-so, I am going to clobber you. You're saying at the same time, you know, I have some doubt as to my ability to make you do so-and-so. The cop says to you, you carry on like that and we'll throw you in the clink. He's saying the same as things to you. Do you know that the police have gotten such a pass that they can't keep law and order in the town? And it's true, they can't, you know. You know that there are people robbed and slugged and so forth? What? Then you have a police force? Well, yes, but, you know, the police force catch criminals and put them in jail and then people let them out of jail. We know all kinds of correlating factors about control. We know that if we try to bang and thud and hammer people into getting in the line and put them in jail and so forth, we know we let them out of jail and they go and they rob and bash people in the head and we arrest them, we put them back in jail and we keep them there and that after a while we let them out and they go and they rob people and bash them in the head and we put them back in jail again. Don't tell me these people are in control. You know all these traffic signs that you see up and down the streets about the speed limits and that sort of thing? Do you know who they're put up there for? They're put up there for the 10% of the people that cause accidents. You know what about these 10% of the people that cause accidents? They are people who cannot be controlled. They're the people who don't read the signs. Isn't that an interesting view? In other words, all the traffic signs are up for the people who don't read the signs. Or does that leave the rest of us? That leaves us operating in an atmosphere of bad control because there are few amongst us who can't be controlled. So after a while, we say control is no good. So what do? We go overboard. Next thing you know, a circuit opens up in our heads and say, nyah, nyah, nyah. We say, what's that? You get the idea. Very strange business. At that moment, aberration sets in. When you yourself believe control is bad. That's the neatest thing you ever looked at. And for Scientology to walk itself up through this mirror maze and out on top of it is a considerable triumph. Because there's not a one of us in Scientology. And that means 175,000 Scientologists across the face of the world. And that's about the actual number. You don't know about many of them. They don't know about you. A lot of them don't even know where the central organizations are located or if they exist. They think the whole thing was written by Buddha. Maybe it was. But the point is, there's hardly any of us that don't stamp and damn and fume and fuss about punishment and control. That's why we're trying to do something. That's why we sort of ganged up on people. We say we just don't like to have whips cracked over our backs. We don't think man should be let in for an era of electronic slavery. We don't think that man should be let in for new wars. We just kind of privately don't think this to ourselves, and we can be covert enough about it by joining Scientology and keeping our mouths shut, or we can join Scientology and scream like hell. But we are all revolutionaries to that extent that we believe bad control is bad. We don't believe that the criminal is ever cured by being punished. We have a feeling that he can be cured by being audited, even when we haven't proven this to our own, whether we believe me or not. Even when we haven't proven it, we have some idea that if we audited a criminal, he'd snap out of it. See, we have an idea this would take place. We believe that there is a better way to straighten man out than beat him to death. And I think all of us have that to a marked degree in common. We think things could be run a little more smoothly and with just a little bit better ARC. And those of us who have tried to keep a show on the road in Scientology have occasionally not believed this. We have said, I don't know, maybe we aren't tough enough in the organizations. Maybe we don't beat enough people over the head and kick enough of them downstairs. So I've made it a rule that the only people I beat in the head and kick downstairs are the people who insist on beating people in the head and kicking them downstairs. And I always kick those only in one direction, that's out the front door. Because I know that we have a non-control factor going on inside the organization. Somebody has been knocking people around, sacking them, doing things to them, one way or the other, that were bad control factors. Well, that person, we either throw out or we give them some audit. And we don't ever throw them out of Scientology. We are hung with a liability that we believe there is hope for any man. I'm sure that all of us feel this, otherwise we wouldn't be here. We feel it. Any man, any place, it's the wildest thing. Somebody will open up on a four-barrel shotgun attack on me of one kind or another from some place or another. And instead of somebody writing me and say, you know, somebody ought to shut that fellow up, I always get a half a dozen letters from auditors saying, do you think I should go over and audit him? How about my dropping in on Joe and straightening him up? Yeah, but this guy practically pulled the rug out. See, he'd done a lot of bad things. And we're going to do something for him that a lot of boys on the back track that were saints didn't even rate. In other words, we're going to save him, we're going to salvage him, we're going to make him enjoy life and put him in good shape. That's true, that's the way Scientologists look at it. Yeah, he needs some auditing. That's the panacea. Should be, it works. Don't punish him, we all say. Audit him. When we get real mad, we merely send him a bad auditor. That's the worst punishment we'll stand for. So we ourselves believe, by our expression, some truth in this. A Scientologist is one who controls environments, controls people, environments, and situations from Tone 40. And that's evidently what he is. And after you've seen some more of this, I think you too will agree with us. Thank you.